The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
For as many, so you can argue, I like that you brought this up, because you can, let's review the team since 2017. 18 was bad, 19 was worse, 20 was a disaster. 21 was pretty good, 22 was pretty good, 23 was a disaster. So 4 out of the last 6 years have been, you know, pretty big disappointments.
Welcome back in, everybody. A mini camp Monday edition of Birds 365, joined now by Philadelphia Inquirer's Marcus Hayes. Marcus, welcome to the show, man. How you doing this morning?
Thanks for having me.
Good to see you, Marcus. Wanted to get you on this week because I enjoyed your Howie Roseman column. Hat tip right off the bat for that. But also, you know, some of the issues you brought up. We'll start with the idea that Howie is untouchable, which I've always thought, and Howie hates that too, by the way. But I always thought it was crazy. He's already been demoted once. We've already been through Joe Banner, who was as close as humanly possible to Jeffrey Lurie, and he moved on from Joe Banner. I think Howie Roseman has a longer leash than almost any other GM in the NFL. I think that's fair to say, but the idea that he's got a job forever. You've been around Jeffrey Lurie more than most. Your thoughts on that part of it?
I think the most significant piece of evidence that you can point to is that Joe Banner, who built not only the Eagles, but established the calculus for running every current NFL team, I think they came along in the second year of free agency and salary cap, right? So Joe Banner mastered it almost immediately. He understood as a business person what it took to run a business, where most teams had former coaches and players with no business acumen whatsoever. Everybody in the league has a capologist now because of Joe Banner. Everybody in the league has, you know, these, you know, things like voidable years and all the tricky stuff exists because of Joe Banner. Joe Banner wanted a piece of a team, and he had to go somewhere else to get it. He built the team. He built the Eagles, got them to a Super Bowl, and he had to leave. No one is sacred in any business, probably, but certainly no one is sacred to Jeffrey Lurie. Now, the difference between Joe and Howie is Jeffrey thinks he built Howie. And it's very, very difficult to admit that your adoptive son, you know, the guy that you created, is no longer as astute, or maybe there just needs to be fresh eyes and fresh blood. And we don't know what that those fresh eyes or fresh blood would be. And I think that's been as much the saving grace for Howie over the years as anything else, not to mention he's probably the best judge of existing talent, of veteran talent in the league, and one of the best I've ever seen. So those are his two, you know, saving graces. It's hard to replace him because he's very, very good at certain facets of his job. But, you know, let's be honest, if they go 6-10 in 2017, if Nick Foles doesn't win the Super Bowl, if Carson Wentz doesn't become an MVP candidate, we're probably looking at somebody else in that job in 2018. I mean, Howie coming out of 2015, 16, and if 17 had been bad, he'd have been a demoted guy who couldn't turn a team, get a team going again. With a lot of great, they had a lot of really, really, really good talent. I mean, all the guys that are retiring now were in their prime back then. That team had to win. Yeah. So, no, nobody's untouchable. And the second bit of evidence, for me anyway, is the Eagles do not dispute that they contacted or they were interested in hiring Bill Belichick. And if you've been around the league at all, you know that no matter what exists before Bill Belichick gets there, it's not safe. And that includes Howie Roseman.
Yeah, Marcus, how much credit do you give Howie, though? And I think part of what you're saying, I mean, part of the reason Howie's earned so much, you know, ability to keep his job here is, like, even just transitioning out of the Carson Wentz era, this team was, the trajectory was up every year after that, after they moved on from Doug. Most GMs are gone with the head coach or gone with the quarterback when there's major change like that. Howie's been able to rebuild the roster in such a quick and efficient way to where the Eagles are contending, even with two top paid quarterbacks in the last 8 years. Most teams don't do that where you see a purgatory. You see teams trying to turn it around. Howie's been able to do that quick. How much credit do you give him for that? And how much credit do you think Lurie gives him for that?
Well, I think he loves him for that. But Xander, I'm not sure if you were around for the last 7 weeks of the season.
Yeah,
they're not on an upward trajectory right now. And not only are they not on an upward trajectory, there are the issues I raised in the column are troubling issues. And I didn't even talk about the head coach's actions, the way the head coach carried himself and his inability to turn it around. And there are for as many. So you can argue. I like that you brought this up because you can. Let's review the team since 2017. 18 was bad. 19 was worse. 20 was a disaster. 21 was pretty good. 22 was pretty good. 23 was a disaster. So 4 out of the last 6 years have been, you know, pretty big disappointments. And the only year that was a surprisingly good year was 2023. In 2022, looking at the roster, independent of Jalen Hurts' ability, I thought that was an 11-win team, Nick's first year, or 2021. I thought that was Nick's first – I thought Nick should win, you know. I thought I should win. John McMullen and Xander Krause as an offensive genius duo.
I don't know about that. I'm not going to go that far.
We had a healthy, you know, young enough Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox, Jason Kelce, Lane Johnson, and that's kind of all you need to start a really good team. And I just, again, Howie's genius, as we've learned, is taking veterans, the right veterans, inserting them and letting them play. C.J. Gardner-Johnson, A.J. Brown. Guys like that, right? Like really good players that other teams maybe undervalue. Hassan Reddick, right? Which gives all the Bryce Huff stands and all the Bryce Huff critics great hope because look what he did with the last Bryce Huff. You know, he became Hassan Reddick. But, you know, Andre Dillard was a mistake. Jalen Reagor was a mistake. And the most important thing about this team since what? The overtime win against Buffalo is how will the young defensive tackles play? Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis fell off a cliff after that overtime game. It was an overtime win, but they weren't the same players afterward. Not coincidentally, neither was Fletcher Cox, who injured his groin. But the most important thing for the Eagles as it relates to Howie right now, he traded up to draft two defensive tackles with red flags about them. For, you know, different red flags and not, you know, prohibitive red flags. They'd have gone, you know, probably still in the first round and probably gotten a lot of playing time. But if Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter play poorly this year, I'm not sure that Davis will, and I don't think Carter will. But if they do, and he's made mistakes with 4 out of the last 5 first-round picks, you got to start thinking, okay, maybe at least this role isn't the best role for this guy.
Not that high expectations is a bad thing, Marcus. In fact, I would argue it's a good thing. I think, you know, setting a high standard for yourself can only result typically in a positive environment. But you mentioned some of those seasons. You know, 2018, they made the playoffs. 2019, they made the playoffs. Last year, they made the playoffs. Now, you had the disaster of the collapse after the 10-1, which kind of taints that, no question about it. Have the expectations gotten too high when we say words like, you know, whatever you want to use, whatever adjective you want to use, underachieving? You know, you know, the Tampa Bay press box, it's sort of an older stadium. And I agree, by the way, one of the Eagles executives, because they sat right behind us, said, happened embarrassing in the middle of the third quarter, which I don't disagree with. But the idea of those high standards and the fact that I think continuity is a key to success in the NFL, and that new blood idea, sometimes that could be a good thing. Sometimes that could be a very, very bad thing. If you think you have the right recipe, stay the course. Agree or disagree?
You're talking about continuity as far as Howie keeping his job.
Howie, Nick, anybody. Yeah, the organization as a whole.
Right, because I agree. I certainly agree. My column didn't say Howie should be fired.
No, I know. Yeah.
My column didn't say Howie will be fired. My column was about how the pressure will affect Howie. You've been around the team long enough, John, to know that Howie, we talk about all this setting the temperature, being the thermostat, right? Is that the right? I get thermometer, thermostat, and all the other terms.
Be the thermostat, thermometer.
So more so than any other GM, because he's around so much, because he's always in the coach's ear, because he's always meeting with the coaches, because he's always in the locker room, Howie Roseman sets the temperature. He's the thermostat of the Eagles. And, you know, and that could be a good thing. Like Pat Gillick was great as that for the Phillies. You know, Dave Dombrowski's pretty good. And these are guys who are around a lot. Like they're like in the clubhouse. Ruben Amaro and Ed Wade were not. They made things uptight. They made things tense. And Howie can do both. We've seen him do both. So my, you know, concern, I guess, is how he handles what I consider to be, and I think we agree, the pressure of these expectations of these significant entities. The most significant, you know, sort of issue for me are the two young defensive tackles. You know, maybe you can argue the rest of it. You guys just were talking about the defensive backfield. He's thrown a lot of assets at the defensive backfield. We don't know who's going to play where in the defensive backfield. Think about it. You got six or seven guys who you don't. The only thing I think we know for certain is that CJ Gardner-Johnson is going to be a starting safety. And Darius Slay is more than likely going to be a starting cornerback. But what Darius Slay are we going to get coming off an injury? Does James Bradbury exist? So not to be too tangential. But so those are two pretty big issues, you know, especially in this town, which loves to this day Buddy Ryan, Jerome Brown, and, you know, name one of the defensive backs they don't love. You know what I'm saying? So Brian Dawkins, it's crazy, but, you know, they love defense here in this town. And every team that's ever been successful has been an offensive team. So, you know, there are irons in the fire. And I guess the highest profile one is $255 million to Jalen Hurts, who regressed. So, yeah, there are reasons to be optimistic, and Howie seems to have done a lot of things to address the issues. But addressing those issues, you know, the fruit that the addressing those issues bears will probably tell where he stands this time next year. And certainly will tell how the Eagles do this coming season.
Marcus, how much do you think the scar tissue of the Chip Kelly days is weighing on Jeffrey Lurie when you talk about the things you're talking about? When you talk about potentially making a decision to move on from even Nick Sirianni last year after the collapse that you talked about. A lot of people said Nick should be gone. Jeffrey decided to stick with him instead of going to Bill. How much do you think the Chip Kelly days are impacting Jeffrey Lurie's decisions on the team now?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, and I haven't thought about it in those terms before, Xander, but it kind of refutes what John was saying about continuity, right? Because when they fired Chip, they fired the general manager.
Yeah.
So you had to have a guy come in, and, you know, how he was waiting in the wings, he's very familiar. It was just a football team. There's 50 guys, you know, and a draft. There are plenty of candidates out there, you know, some with Eagles ties that they could recycle or bring back or recycle. I mean, I don't know that Jeffrey, because I think we agree kind of that Chip is like the only big mistake Jeffrey's ever made.
Yeah.
Which is a
Jeffrey
was a big one. It was a big mistake.
Yeah.
30 Jeffrey. Years. And it wasn't even that big. Like, Chip Kelly changed once he got here. Like, Nobody was saying, oh my God, he made a huge mistake after the first 2 years of Chip Kelly.
No.
And I think we were all surprised that Chip Kelly got fired before the end of the season, the third year. You know, I've been around all these teams for 30 years. I've never been more surprised that a guy was let go, you know, in that moment. Because Jeffrey doesn't fire people during a season either. No. So, Jeffrey's been really, really good at that. He really, really good at that. I don't think that there's a lot of scar tissue from Chip. I think it's a fresh set of issues with Nick. Whereas Chip was dismissive and, you know, emotional intelligence became incredibly important after Chip. I think sometimes Nick is too invested. So I don't think Jeffrey hired Chip with his eyes wide open. And I think he had reservations about certain things. So I don't think that the Chip Kelly experience will affect him down the road, other than making sure that there is some sort of control over the head coach, that the head coach can't just run everything. And we saw that with Doug, and we're seeing that with Nick. You know, Nick was riding pretty high this time last year, and he didn't get control. And it was very obvious to me that even though everybody wants it, right? Everybody wants that control when you invest that much. That was a deal breaker. That was a non-issue for Nick going forward. And honestly, you know, we heard rumblings about Belichick turning over a new leaf, being more conciliatory, being able to work with people, promising people that wouldn't be the case again. But I really think that that was one of the issues that made Jeffrey a little leery and of pursuing the Belichick angle. Not that there was a whole lot of fire there, but there was certainly smoke. He thought about it, and it surprised me that he thought about it, honestly.
Yeah, it's surprising from the standpoint, Marcus, of his history hiring head coaches. If you think, go all the way back to Ray and the fact that, you know, it's unknown, young, off the radar guys to a certain extent. Andy wasn't even a position coordinator, was a position coach, and all of a sudden he's a head coach, and that worked out beautifully. Chip was probably the highest profile because he was such a hot candidate coming out of college, but it was a college coach, you know. And obviously Doug was down on the list. They pretty much called up Andy at the end, say, hey, got any ideas? And then Nick Sirianni was kind of out of left field as well. And all of a sudden you're talking to a, you know, I'm an old guy, so it doesn't matter. You know, I, you know, Bill's over 70 years old, and you're talking maybe the greatest coach in NFL history. It's such a deep shift of his traditional thinking when it comes to head coaches, not to mention the offensive aspect of it. Is it just because he's a Boston guy and he loves the Patriots and he tried to buy the Patriots and he loves the organization and he loves Kraft? Is it just about that more than the other stuff?
Well, we kind of went through this with Tom Coughlin, right?
Yeah. Josh McDaniels a little bit. People forget how close Josh McDaniels was getting the Eagles job before they shifted and turned toward Nick Sirianni.
Well, that's true, but it's a much better comparison with Tom, because Tom is a lot like Bill, right?
Yeah.
Tom is a veteran coach who wants power. And Jeffrey Lurie has never hired anything but a rookie coach. To even and Bill Belichick is the exact opposite of a rookie coach. He's a two-time NFL head coach with, you know, Parcells pedigree. That's the total. And again, he didn't hire him, you know, so there's that. So he still hasn't. But I was surprised. And we also have to address the issue here, the kind of the elephant in the room, which you just addressed about yourself, John. Jeffrey's getting older, you know. There are only so many more years that he's going to be involved like he is now with the sort of the successes and the failures and the day-to-day running of the team. He's grooming his son to take over. And
yeah. You
know, God bless him. That it could work out great. So I think that when business owners begin to see their tenure coming to a close, they're like, okay, well, how can I get the most out of the last few years? And again, Jeffrey has been a very conscientious steward of this franchise. I think he sort of sees it as a farm. And sometimes you have to let fields go fallow, and sometimes you have to burn them. And, you know, there's a cycle to it, and you have to be a good steward. And he has been. And I think that he realized that a Belichick move was not good stewardship for the franchise as it is and the franchise in the future, because assuming Jeffrey, you know, steps aside or steps down sooner than later, you might have a 75-year-old Bill Belichick working with Julian, you know, and Julian, his son, Robert Kraft couldn't control Bill Belichick. Robert Kraft's a billionaire, hyper-successful businessman who manages people. And to put yourself and your son and your franchise in that situation with such a big caustic personality who's only been successful really with a quarterback who was arguably the greatest quarterback ever. And a lot of people say that, but let's be honest, Bill created that quarterback as well. You know, as much as great as Tom Brady was, yeah, he was nothing until Bill Belichick got a hold of him. But who's been successful only in that paradigm and had years and years of limited success with that in that paradigm, that's a really, really risky thing to do. And Jeffrey doesn't take huge risks. The biggest risk he probably ever took is Nick Sirianni. And 2 years later, Nick Sirianni is in a Super Bowl, even more so than Chip Kelly, more so than Andy, who he was trying to hire for years as an offensive coordinator, and, you know, more so than Doug, who, you know, had his bona fides. Those are Nick, Chip, and Doug are easy outs. You know, you can get away from those guys real easy. Andy was a bigger risk. And so my point kind of is he's willing to take a risk as long as it's not a risk that could ruin the franchise.
Marcus, one of your assertions really sticks out to me, and it's the one I agree with perhaps the most. When you talk about personnel and draft picks, I do think there's more nuance to those discussions where you have Devontae Smith, Landon Dickerson, and even an AJ Brown trade. Opposite sides of bad decisions that at least balance the scale to some regard. But the one I categorically agree with is the regression of Jalen Hurts. $255 million. He's being paid like a top quarterback in the league. How much onus is on him this year to turn this around? And what does that look like to you? Is it just less turnovers? Is it taking the next step in the passing game? What does Jalen Hurts have to do in your eyes? And then I guess I could say in Howie Roseman's eyes to make him feel more secure in the decision to pay Jalen Hurts.
Before we get into the answer to that question, I think it's fair to Jalen Hurts to qualify two things. Number one, he's on his fourth offensive coordinator in 5 years in the NFL. And his second one was pretty good, right? Number two, he's only been in the NFL for 4 years, only a starter for three of them, right? So yeah, there's a lot of things he doesn't know. That said, he's at the point now where he has to understand how winning NFL games works. I'm a big believer in quarterback wins mattering, in that quarterback losses really, really matter, right? Quarterbacks have more power to lose a game than any other position in sports, except maybe hockey goalie. And great hockey goalies get pulled all the time.
Yep. Great, I knew that because I was a goalie when I was a kid,
Yeah. But great quarterbacks do not get pulled for years. Sometimes they're horrible for 2 or 3 years. So they have the most power to lose games. There cannot be any excuse for Jalen losing games. And Jalen lost games last year. He had pretty good stats, but he made plays that lost the game.
He lost the Jets game. He lost the Seattle game right off the bat.
With he played a big part in that playoff game as well, I would say.
So he didn't lose the games because he was untalented. He lost the games because he didn't manage the game properly. And there can be no excuse for him regressing or not progressing this year, because this might be the most talented Eagles offense I've ever seen. This is easily the two best wide receivers they've ever had, like by so much. It's ridiculous.
It is. It's
because AJ Brown might be one of the five best players in the team history, not just the best receiver. He might be one of the five best receivers in team history. Okay. And Devontae Smith might be in the top 10. Okay. So you've got these two great weapons. I love Saquon, everything about Saquon Barkley, everything about him. And I think he was a brilliant addition and a luxury. It's you could have drafted a running back. You didn't have to spend that money on him, but he's great. He's really great. Okay. You've got 80% of your excellent offensive lineback, and you've got a very, very good tight end. This is a loaded offense. This might be their best offense ever. Okay. Jalen Hurts can't lose. Jalen Hurts can't be the reason they lose. It's just that simple. And, you know, Jeffrey Lurie was really, really eager to draft Jalen Hurts in the second round. And they did. And, you know, Howie has claimed credit for that. And he's given credit for that. And he's amplified that pick. And he was the guy that was blamed for it in the moment. For like 2 years. We didn't know Jeffrey was really behind this for a couple, 3 years until it worked out, right? Because that's what owners, that's what GMs were for. Howie wasn't not on board, but, you know, this was a – Jeffrey really, really, really loved Jalen Hurts the way he loved Nick Sirianni – or not Nick Sirianni, Nick Foles. So the reason Nick Foles was there in 2017 is because Jeffrey Lurie was willing to eat $10 million on the backup quarterback spot to acquire Nick Foles and get rid of, what was his name? The backup that came with Doug from Kansas City. Chase Daniel.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water. Enjoy. And watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So, all that to say, you know, Howie's been thumping his chest pretty hard over, look what I did in acquiring, and we've developed this quarterback factory. That's where quarterback factory was.
Yeah, that was a mistake, the quarterback factory. Yeah.
Well, you know, you can argue if Jalen Hurts.
I just mean the labeling.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, maybe the label, they're worth the label. If Jalen Hurts goes to the Hall of Fame or goes to six Pro Bowls or something like that, right? So, but yeah, 255 for a guy who wasn't a top 15 quarterback last year, if he's not a top 10 quarterback this year, it's a mistake. That's all it is. And you can make mistakes, and you can win making mistakes. Like, Jalen Hurts doesn't have to be an All-Pro for them to win, but he can't be the guy he was last year losing games.
Yeah, I mean, the quarterback position, you mentioned how important it is, Marcus, and if anything, you may have undersold it. I think it's the most important position in sports by a long shot. You mentioned goaltender, starting pitcher, maybe in baseball on a particular day, but those guys only start once every 5 days. It's really important, but it's important everywhere. Not just in this city. And, you know, you think about the modern NFL, and it's offensively driven. I think we can all agree with that. So basically every team in this league should be trying to maximize their quarterback, wherever he is, whether he's a superstar or a first-round pick like Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels in this past draft. Everybody should be trying to maximize what they have at the quarterback position. Did the Eagles do that with the sort of convoluted approach with Nick Sirianni and keeping him, but saying, we need new ideas, fresh ideas, whatever you want to do. And now all of a sudden, Kellen Moore and Doug Nussmeier are here, Marcus. And by the way, they're on an island because it's Kellen Moore, Doug Nussmeier, and everybody else is Knicks guys. They kept everybody else. Is that the right way to maximize Jalen Hurts, even with that talent? Talent means more than everything. But even with that talent, is that the right way to do it?
Well, I guess I'd have to ask you, John, and I don't mean to, you know, throw it right back to you. What would have been the alternative?
The alternative would have been, I hired a young offensive coordinator. If you don't think there's going to be growing pains, that's your fault. Status quo. Get all better. Right. Shane Steichen wasn't great in his first year, and all of a sudden, bang. Boom.
Well, I'll argue that point. because
Sagan
was the guy that saved the franchise when Nick stopped calling plays. Like, they don't go to the playoffs without Shane Steichen, who I don't know about you. I don't mean to be, again, too tangential, but I have a hard time getting my hands around Shane Steichen. I still have a hard time, like, figuring out Shane Steichen, who's productive. He's a good coach, you know, but he's like, you know, spaghetti with no sauce. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's not a lot of, like, flavor there. And that's on me. It's not on Shane. Shane, whatever Shane's doing, he's doing the right thing. He's doing it well. I honestly would not have had a problem with them retaining Brian Johnson. I don't think Brian Johnson was as much the problem as the players were. And there's going to be some outrage from what I just said there. I understand that. But, you know, there were failures frequently in front of Jalen Hurts that affected Jalen Hurts. And I don't know why more of this. It's kind of like talking about some of the more outrageous stuff Trump has done, like factual stuff he's done and said. Not more isn't made of it. Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown went off script with the last play on a road game. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Which is remarkable on itself. Not just, they didn't call an audible. They called a different play that had nothing to do with the initial play. All right.
And later, by the way, can I chime in, Marcus? Because I want you to also address that particular play.
Right.
Because at least AJ took accountability. The quarterback hasn't taken accountability to this day.
Well,
Does that bother you?
Because after AJ Brown, in defending his coach, his relationship with his coach, by saying, I get to do whatever I want, the coach came out and said, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that happens all the time. That's absurd. You can't run a team that way. So if that was happening in real time, to circle back to Brian Johnson, how much could you blame Brian Johnson if the quarterback and the receiver are frequently changing the play and the offense stagnates? Now, you can argue, well, you know, he'd failed before. Brian Johnson had failed us before, and we were just trying to do the next best thing. We knew his play call was going to fail. But number one, so what? Your play calls failed too. Number two, one of the things that's eroded more than in sports more than anything else is respect for the coaches. That's insubordination. That's rank insubordination, and it's endorsed. It's allowed by the head coach. So what kind of respect can you have for Brian Johnson? How can you blame Brian Johnson when the plays he called aren't being run? And what kind of respect do you have for Nick Sirianni, who's allowing you to get away with it? It's like being a permissive parent. We've all seen those kids on airplanes.
Oh, yeah. Right?
So that's what Nick has been. He's been a permissive parent. To who? To, you know, a guy that the Tennessee Titans didn't want to pay, and a guy that, you know, who had one good year and was a second round pick despite being the most talented or the second most talented quarterback in his draft. So, and I'll tell you know, I wrote a story. I was told after, I can't remember which game it was. It was a home game, and it was the game that the guy told me that AJ Brown's body language was affecting the rookies. Now, I was able to go with that right away. I had to circle back a couple months later to talk about the locker room scene, because in that game, there were four or five games left. And during that game, a veteran player said, we don't like the fact that – I asked about AJ. We don't like the fact that that guy – and pointed Jalen Hurts' locker room. So that guy get treated different than the rest of us. Huge issue.
Yeah. I'll say this, Marcus.
I hope he figures it out.
I like
Bernard Wilson, who is now defensive coordinator.
Yeah, Tennessee as well. From the quarterback position, and this is not a great comparison, but I just say it from a coaching perspective, from a pure coaching perspective. You go back to the 70s. I mean, guys used to call the the offense at the line of scrimmage, and it was a different game. It was a different mindset. Now, I Peyton Manning would be the best example of this. Peyton essentially ran the game at the line of scrimmage. And one of my criticisms of Chip Kelly is he would never want a player like that because he wanted total control of what was going on. And if I were a coach, that's exactly the player I'd want. Now, it's difficult to find. But in other words, if I have a player like that, or if I aspire to have a player like that, who can do things by himself in real time at the line of scrimmage, I think that's a positive. Maybe the Eagles gave Jalen Hurts too much too soon, but I don't have a problem with quarterbacks being able to go up and say, you know what? I see something. Let me take advantage of it. I think that's a good thing. Maybe he's not entirely prepared to do it just yet. And maybe they have to scale back on that.
Right, but that doesn't address the question. The question was, should Brian Johnson have stayed?
Yeah.
My contention is, if the quarterback is going off script and failing, then you can't evaluate Brian Johnson the way you need to in order to figure out whether he should stay or not.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, in theory, you should. Every quarterback should be able to look across the line of scrimmage and get to a better play. And as you know, the only way you're going to figure that out is to do it, you know, and they're going to be growing pains. But the offense that Jalen Hurts didn't start his first season, the offenses he came from and the systems he came from in college didn't prepare him to do that. Certainly not the way Carson Wentz was prepared to do that, running a pro offense at, you know, maybe a lower level, but running it very well enough to be the second overall pick. So, you know, and I don't think Peyton Manning was doing that in Indy, you know, right off the bat in his 45th start. You know what I'm saying?
No. He was terrible his first season. People forget. Right. He was terrible.
So, you know, not only was it too much too soon, you're doing it with a non-veteran offensive coordinator and a first-time head coach. So, you know, the scenario, the likelihood that and maybe we're making too much of it. Maybe it happened twice a game. Maybe it happened 34 times all year, you know? But the scenario we're talking about probably can't happen unless you've got a quarterback who's been around a lot more with more established coaches who, you know, like, you know, Nick Sirianni calls plays till he didn't call plays before he got here. You know, he's called plays for 7 games ever, right?
Yeah.
So let's be honest. You know, you've got a guy who's called plays for 7 games in the NFL, a guy who's called plays 0 games in the NFL, and a quarterback who's in his, you know, what, 34th through 50th game or whatever. So that is probably not the place that you're going to go to succeed. I mean, imagine being Jason Kelce and Lane Johnson and on that team, and hearing the play call changed either in the, you know, either in the huddle or at the line of scrimmage by AJ Brown and or Jalen Hurts. You know, Lane Johnson coaches tackles in the offseason. Jason Kelce could be a head coach next year, you know. And these two guys are, you know,
he's got too much talent to be a head coach.
He does. It'd be an absolute utter waste of time. Unless he was just like one of those guys that shows up at like 9 o'clock in the morning and gets to the game at 12:30 for a 1 o'clock game. I think he's earned that. But my point being, you've got guys on the offense who got to be looking at these two fellas being like, that's what we're doing, you know? So yeah, I think we've spent way too much time talking about one thing AJ Brown said, and it's all my fault.
It is. The problem was it was a poor, you know, it's ironic. Seattle won the game and they were playing with Drew Locke. He made the same call at the line of scrimmage, but he made the right call. And I think the Eagles had single coverage. I think it was Bradbury. Yeah, it was Bradbury. And then Jalen did the same thing with AJ. Problem is he threw it in the double coverage and he underthrew it and he didn't execute. So
And didn't the safety know the play?
Yeah, like the safety was coming over. The safety was Julian Love. It was Julian Love.
He read that
right away. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I think he heard the call or saw the formation and knew exactly what was going on. And he was like, and then I couldn't believe they actually threw it, you know.
Marcus Hayes with us on Birds 365. Make sure you guys follow Marcus on Twitter or
one of my favorite Twitter handles ever.
Yeah, it's a great Twitter handle, Ink Stained Wretch, and read all his work at Philadelphia Inquirer. Marcus, I got one more question. Sorry to keep you long. One more question on the way out the door, because your explanation of the coordinators and coaching is tremendous, but why did they keep Nick? Like, if he was here and he starts his career as a play caller, and it was the ugliest seven games besides the last seven of this year of his tenure, then you bring in Brian Johnson, and they scapegoat him after Shane Steichen takes the team to the Super Bowl. Now you bring in Kellen Moore. Like, if Kellen Moore succeeds, are they going to go through the same process where Kellen's going to get a head coaching opportunity somewhere, and it's all on Nick Sirianni to rebuild the carousel? Or should they just be hiring a head coach play caller like they originally wanted and stop the carousel on the offensive side of the football?
Well, and this is as critical as I'll probably ever be of Jeffrey Lurie. He really hates to be wrong. He really loves to, like, the hiring of Andy Reid in the, and we have to understand how unpopular Jeffrey Lurie and Joe Banner were in 1999. The hiring of Andy Reid and the five NFC championship games and the Super Bowl appearance and Donovan McNabb instead of Ricky Williams and all that stuff, it validated he and Joe Banner. But Lurie more than anything else. Lurie was an interloper. Lurie has a PhD, I think, in women's studies from Brandeis. Okay, Jerry Jones ain't got one of them. So being right about stuff that other owners aren't even really sniffing, I think, is his greatest satisfaction. And if that's critical, I'm sorry. I've been around Jeffrey for 30 years. He's proud of his genius, his brilliance, and he's really good at that. That said, I think sometimes it can be blinding. And the Chip Kelly hire was a bad hire, but he got Chip, and they were going to, again, in 2013, they tore up the NovaCare Center and made it a sports science institute. Yeah. Chip had guys drinking shakes and wearing sleep monitors. I mean, this was astonishing. The entire culture changed under Jeffrey Lurie.
Yeah.
And when he had to fire Chip, it broke his heart because he was wrong.
Yeah.
Same thing with Nick.
By the way, Marcus,
there's been no coach less popular after their first press conference in the history of sports than Nick Sirianni, who lied to us, lied to me when I said, "What did you think of the Carson Wentz tape? You know, what do you think you can do?" He says, "I haven't watched any tape on Carson Wentz."
Yeah, which was
like, what kind of whatever. Says something that ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, of course
he was nervous.
You don't have to lie about something like that.
I know.
If that's how he acts in that moment of relatively minor pressure compared to, you know, like an NFL game or an NFL post game, what's he got? So Nick Sirianni sort of the flower power stuff. You know, I mean, again, we're talking about an absolute low point, a total nadir. And I'm not sure that flower power catches on and Nick gets the locker room unless Jason Kelce breaks the huddle after a win with roots on three. One, two, three roots, you know. Yeah. That said, to answer your question, Xander, he would have to admit that he was wildly wrong about a coach that has taken him to the playoffs three times in a row and the Super Bowl once. So, you know. Yeah. If he fired Nick and Nick went somewhere and was successful and the next guy fell on his face, that would be even worse, you know?
Yeah.
So, and he likes him. He really likes Nick Sirianni. Like,
yeah.
They're human beings. And he thinks Nick's a good coach. And I think Nick's like, I think Nick's probably a better head coach than he would be a coordinator, just like Doug. You know, like Nick understands and is not bad with managing all of the personalities. And think about some of the personalities he had. Jason Kelsey's got a great profile, right? Jason Kelsey is not an easy guy to be the boss of. You know, CJ Gardner-Johnson, not an easy guy to be the boss of. Darius Slay, not an easy guy to be the boss of. And those are just three guys. And John's in that locker room. And there are tons of, like, disparate personalities. And Nick lets them be good. You know, they're disparate personalities. And if there's locker room leadership, it can work. That was kind of missing last year, among other things. But Nick has done a good job as a head coach. Not a perfect job. And, you know, the last thing I'll say is Jeffrey's a pretty patient guy with quarterbacks, with players. You know, Brandon Graham didn't look great early. Fletcher Cox didn't look great early. Lane Johnson got suspended twice, you know. Nick Sirianni is a young coach. He's a young man, and he's a young coach. He's never been a head coach before, and he can learn too. I don't think you're ever going to see Nick Sirianni in a visitor's tunnel telling off the fans again. You know, we can all learn. And this is the biggest break he's ever had, the biggest chance he's ever had. And I think Jeffrey Lurie believes that Nick Sirianni can take as big a step forward as anyone else, which is probably a column I'm going to write in the offseason. You know, not only do the Eagles need to get these from the players, they need to get this from Nick Sirianni.
Yeah. At Inkstained Wretch, Paulo Marcus on X, Twitter, Inquirer.com, one of the best sports columnists in this country for my money. I appreciate you all the extra time, Marcus. We kept you a long time, but always appreciate talking to you. Thanks again. I'll see you down there soon enough, hopefully. Minicamp, you going down for minicamp at all?
You know, it's interesting. Like, I never liked going to training camp and minicamp and off-season OTAs and stuff like that. And now you have to ask permission if you're in my job. If you're a columnist, you have to, like, say, can I please come?
Yeah, they're crazy.
And I was actually thinking about saying this. Like, all the stuff you get from OTAs and mini camps and training camp is garbage. You can't tell. The coaches can't tell who's going to project to do what in games. The only thing you really get is, like, depth chart stuff, which they could tell you. Who's practicing, who's not. These guys like charting, you know, every pass, or like, this guy took this many reps with the ones, this guy took this many reps with the ones. This, you know, you're just kind of spinning your wheels. You know, that stuff, I find it to be a waste of time. I'll go if there's an opening, but now that I have to raise my hand and ask permission to go to something I don't like to do, like, there are three other sports and I got a family. So, you know, standing on a sideline, getting a sunburn and smelling your sunscreen, John, ain't my idea.
Can't blame you for that, Marcus.
I'm taking a random bullet out, but I appreciate it.
Take it straight.
Make sure everybody reads his work. You might not agree with everything he says, but you will respect his ability to define it and stand by it. So I certainly do respect that. Marcus, thanks for joining us on Bird 365 and giving us some extra time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having us, Andrew and John. Take care.
Appreciate it.
There's Marcus Hayes from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Make sure you guys follow him on Twitter. I know he gets a lot of Eagles fans fired up, but I got to be honest. I'm in content. I listen to content all day long. I do this show. I listen to Dan. I read Eagles Twitter. He knows how to make me think. He certainly does, and that's one of the best things you can do. And when you consume as much content I do, I guess you learn to love people like that. And I do like Marcus Hayes because I think he means what he says, and he says what he means. And he makes me think. Johnny Mack, what was your takeaway from Marcus Hayes? That's something I didn't expect to be talking about on June 3rd. I got to be honest.
He wrote a column, so I wanted.
Yeah, it's a great column. I've read it as well.
Yeah, I wanted to get him on because he's one of those guys, and you know, look, a lot of people want to hear cheerleaders, and Marcus isn't a cheerleader. I'm not a cheerleader, so I respect people like Marcus. He's trying to tell you the truth. In an objective fashion, sometimes it's good. Most of the time it's good with this team. Sometimes it's not as good. And he does one of the best jobs about it, doing that. The guys who are blowing smoke up here and everything's great. I got to be honest. The people that like that, I don't know why you'd like that. you know, not being told the truth, not being told what's going on, not being, you know, told, explained some of the issues and some of the things that need to change. Because there's a lot of hype on this team. And, you know, some of it's deserved, some of it's not deserved. And there's a lot of question marks as well. Pointing them out is not a negative thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I thought he made some good points. I can't say I agreed with all of them, but I do think he makes a good point. And like I said, I respect his ability to sit there, face the music, and back it up all the way to the bank. So pretty good stuff there. We'll take a commercial timeout. We got about 45 minutes left to play on the show today. John and I are going to get into what to expect on this week's mini week. Eagles are at mini camp this week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So if you believe Marcus, it means absolutely nothing. But we
he's
will
right. He's right about the veterans. I do believe it means a little bit to the younger players. But yeah, I wouldn't overemphasize it. As I always say, we can only talk about what we see at the particular time of year. But yeah, I'm not going to be referring back to OTAs in May when we hit training camp in the regular season.
Yeah. Makes sense. It's right now in June 3rd, when we're doing Birds 365 every day, it means a whole lot. But you're right. When the season comes, you won't be thinking back too much on this, I guess, unless they have a collapse and you're wondering if they could have done more. Before I get to a break, I do want to hit this. We missed this. Guys, for anybody in the chat, I don't like to bring up super chats during the guest because I don't want to interfere on what the guest is saying and interject on the interview. But I will always get to them. After the guest is gone, he said, are we going to talk about how many games Jalen won? So many game winning drives.
About it all the time. The guy, this team, I talk about it from the standpoint of those who wanted to move on from Nick Sirianni as well. You can't win 29 out of 32 NFL games and all of a sudden be an idiot. I mean, you can't have it both ways. Same thing with Jalen. You can't be a bad quarterback and win that many games. But they did what they did down the stretch, and it's relevant to bring it up, and it's relevant to explain because I haven't heard a good explanation as to what did happen, to be honest with you. I've heard a lot of people speculate. I don't think the Eagles know what happens. I really don't. I really don't. It was that kind of you're 10-1 again, you know, some style point issues and everybody was pointing that out. They weren't happy about how they were winning, but wins are wins. And if you're going to talk it out, you know, that's pretty good. And if you go back to the season prior, and even if you go back to the run in 2021, they had an historic stretch, the best stretch in Philadelphia Eagles modern history for winning football games. And that was with Jalen Hurts and Nick Sirianni. So to say they can't win football games, they already proven they can win football games.
Yeah, let's get to our commercial break. I want to touch real quick on SMD Eagles. SMD, we appreciate you always being here. They'll take up for their guests no matter what. No, we will not, but we will certainly give him the platform and the ability to speak his mind. I'm not here to muzzle anybody or put on a bunch of cheerleaders. That I don't think that would be fun for you guys. It wouldn't be fun for me. It wouldn't be fun for Johnny Mac. So I think Marcus Hayes did a good job. I thought he explained it well. Look, you don't have to agree with everything. I can't sit here and say I think Jalen Carter is a bust too. But Marcus has the right to that opinion and at least how it relates to Howie Roseman. So I thought it was a pretty good segment. I enjoyed it. Let's get to a commercial break. Johnny Mac, you and I will come back and we will get into this mini camp and what we'll expect. And one other question I want to ask you about this offseason for the Eagles and how improved they really are. So we'll do all that coming up next on Birds 365.
If you missed any of today's show on the Jacob Media channel, listen to the podcast on your way home. Available on YouTube, Apple, and Spotify.